Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back for the 175th Green Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call. We're starting out with 24 people, and it's really great to see everybody. It's a gorgeous day here in sunny Southern California. As Myla Reeson will attest, this is what we live in Southern California for. It's been 10 solid days of sunshine and moderate temperatures. It's great to see everybody. We have a really packed agenda. Carl Grossman, you're going to be right in your element here. We're going to be talking a lot about nukes and the catastrophe that's ongoing. Maya Rossum, good to see you. We have the great Linda Seeley, who's going to lead us off with a report on a hearing at Diablo Canyon. We're going to talk about the amount, best I can tell, the bribery total. They should be in Times Square. A big sign on what the bribery total is in Ohio for nuclear. I see it as around $70 million, but we have Connie Klein on, who's going to give us a more refined estimate. We're going to talk about advancing solar, and for the whole first hour is going to be a utility run, which is really an incredible story. John Steiner, good to see you, Tatanka. Glad to have you with us. Second hour, we're going to get an update on Julian Assange, and we're going to actually open it up. We did very successfully before. We did a little poll and let 10 people tell what their most important topic is. We're going to do that in the second hour, along with Mike Hirsch, who's going to give us a rundown on the uncommitted movement. Next week, I'm going to try and put together a full 2 hours on the Middle East. We're going to call it the Frog and Scorpion Show. We'll have an hour of pro-Israel history, and then an hour on, the movement to stop the war. I will tell you, I am still 100% convinced. You'll never convince me otherwise that Netanyahu coordinated the October 7th attack with Hamas. So you can put that in your pipe and smoke it, and I will repeat that next week. At any rate, we're going to go back to nuclear. Linda Seeley, one of the Mothers for Peace, I just had a hearing today, a big one, an important one, on Diablo Canyon. We're going to talk about salaries. We're going to talk about a Washington Post article that basically proclaimed rooftop solar in California to be too cheap to meter. And that's where we're at. We're in two locations now where renewables are too cheap to meter. One is in the daytime in California, and the other is in the nighttime in West Texas, where they just give away wind-driven electricity for free. And we are now facing, I also saw today, by the way, an article from Bloomberg about how they've been talking about one of the big justifications allegedly for proceeding with nuclear, including at Diablo Canyon, has been desalinization. And a big article in Bloomberg today basically says that they're doing solar desalinization now, which blows everybody away. So this idea that we need nuclear to desalinate water is gone by the boards. Camilla Reese, great to see you. Linda Seeley, tell us, if you would, please, what was the nature of the hearing that happened today in San Luis Obispo in front of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
Thank you so much for asking me to be on today. Hi, Myla. Hi, everybody else. Hi, Tatanka. I am glad to be here. We had a hearing today, not in San Luis Obispo, but in D.C.
Okay.
Yeah. And
I presume it was Zoomed.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
And it was with the appeal board for the 2.206 petition. That doesn't mean anything to anybody here. But what that is when you... Back in September of 23, Mothers for Peace filed a petition with the commissioners at the NRC to immediately shut down Diablo Canyon because of the unsafe condition of the Unit 1 reactor pressure vessel. And they thumbed their nose at us and tossed it over to this thing called the 2.206 petition. And that is where basically... appeals to the NRC go to rest in peace forever and ever. However, you do have the opportunity to challenge that 2.206 process, and we chose to do that. And the what we did was bring in our expert, Dr. Digby McDonald, who is like the world's greatest expert in metals, like the chemistry of metals, basically. And what happens to a reactor pressure vessel is that being bombarded with all of this radiation after it's turned on, the reactor pressure vessel is where the reactor, where the atomic reaction happens. It's under a lot of pressure, and it's also
Hot. It's hot as hell.
very hot, 5,500 degrees, and then hot with radiation. So there are these tiny, teeny weeny little crevices in there that when they manufacture it, the hydrogen is it gets embedded within the these little teeny weeny cracks. And anyway, they can expand and get bigger and blah blah. And then they can, if they have to shut it down really quickly, the pressure vessel can boom, blow up like a glass, you know, a shattered glass, mixing cold water and hot stuff, and boom, bitty boom. Bad scene, meaning we would be toast, basically. And so would Southern California. And so would our whole country. It's kind of like it would be a Chernobyl type event if it happened, God forbid. So anyway, this unit, this pressure vessel is in bad shape. And Digby, our dear, precious expert, was on this in this meeting today with the 2.206 committee. Also attending there were the Independent Safety Committee of Diablo Canyon, who listened very, very intently, I could tell. And he Digby explained in beautiful detail about why this pressure vessel needs to be shut down now, why it's dangerous now. It's reached the maximum of its ductility, meaning the ability to like expand and contract, and it's in a very unsafe condition. So we made that appeal. I don't know what'll happen. They'll probably say we don't have, there's nothing to worry about. But you know, if you don't keep trying, then you can't get anywhere if you give up. So we've got other things going on at the NRC. We've got things going on at the California Public Utilities Commission, having to do with the cost of Diablo Canyon and the availability, Harvey, as you know, of the not only the solar energy, but now California. There's a new report about California having 10,000 megawatts of backup battery available, battery storage, which store they're capable of storing energy for 4 hours. Okay. The reason for keeping Diablo Canyon online initially, according to Gavin Newsom, our governor, was because, oh my God, what if we had a 10-minute brownout in the middle of September? That would be like the worst thing in the world. So we want to keep an old decrepit nuclear power plant online for 5 more years so that we don't have a 10-minute brownout. But now with the new battery storage that we have online that's available between about 5 and 9 p.m., the time when the sun goes down, they always say, oh, well, solar does, you know, goes away at night, and so you have to have Diablo Canyon. Well, solar doesn't go away. Well, solar does go away at night, but if solar has charged up all of these batteries during the middle of the day, we have good 4 hours of power to go back into the grid and prevent any power outages in California. So their last argument has been squashed. So,
Well, also, Linda, when the sun goes down is when wind power kicks in as well.
that's right. And getting back to what you have to say, Harvey, about corruption, I think this is a good time for you to talk about that because there's no reason for Diablo.
No. Well, there is. The reason is these guys are stealing us blind. Linda and I were discussing before the show, the chair, who's a woman, of PG&E, which owns Diablo Canyon, is paid $17 million a year. And the chair of the LADWP, which is a muni, the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, is paid $750,000 a year. So the head of PG&E gets about 18, 19, 20 times as much as the chair of the DWP. And last year, what was her bonuses last year, Linda?
She got a $24 million bonus last year.
So what does that work out to an hour? I mean, so these guys are making tons of money. And here we have, we just had, it was in the paper, Newsom was at a battery storage facility, a ribbon cutting, and they asked him if batteries could back up the whole state of California. And he laughed and said, "Oh, no, you silly child." The fact is, it can, and already has been able to for quite a while.
And by the end of this year, by the end of 24, they now have 10,000 megawatts online. They're going to have 14,000 megawatts available in battery storage by the end of 24.
Which
So,
is 7 times the capacity of Diablo Canyon, which
right.
is 2,200 megawatts on a good day when
That's
it's
right.
not blowing up or melting down. So this is the situation. I do want to emphasize this question of sorry, my phone just went off for spam. The question of embrittlement is not a small deal. The average age of an American reactor now is 42 years. And as Linda explained, the reactor pressure vessel, which is where the chain reaction is contained, is exposed day in and day out to huge levels of heat, pressure, and radiation. And under those conditions, the metal, the stainless steel, 6 inches thick, deteriorates. And what happens is it loses its ductility, its resilience. So if, God forbid, there's a meltdown and they pour in water, the pressure vessel will shatter like glass. There will be huge emissions of hydrogen, which is extremely explosive. There was actually a small explosion, hydrogen explosion at 3 Mile Island. And when the bubble was in the containment at 3 Mile Island, that's when everybody was really scared. And what happened at Fukushima, well, at Chernobyl, but then also at Fukushima, all four of the reactors that blew up at Fukushima were hydrogen explosions. And one of them wasn't even operating. Unit 4 was not even operating. And the danger at Unit 4 was the worst because the radioactive fuel pool, spent fuel pool at the top of the reactor, these geniuses put the spent fuel pool at the top of the reactor, could have blown up because it lost coolant. And I will tell you, I can't resist telling this story. They were at the brink of an apocalyptic explosion at Diablo at Fukushima because Unit 4, the spent fuel pool at the top of the reactor, lost coolant. And if you lose coolant with the spent fuel, the zirconium cladding on the spent fuel rods, if it's they're exposed to air, they will catch fire and explode and emit more than enough radiation to wipe human beings forever off this planet. I mean, the amount of radiation that can come out of a spent fuel pool is almost probably basically it is incalculable. And they were moments away from this happening at Fukushima in Unit 4. They had no idea how they were going to get coolant into the spent fuel pool at Unit 4, standing 100 feet in the air. And I couldn't make this up. There was an aftershock from the earthquake, and the aftershock fixed the cooling problem. I mean, if you don't believe in God or something like that, you can never begin to explain how that happened. So somebody somewhere along the line, whoever's controlling the earthquakes in this world, gave us a break at Fukushima. But the point of Diablo Canyon is that you have Unit 2, which is 40 plus years old. Well, it's gonna be 40 years. It's 40 years old this year, and it's embrittled like all the other reactors in the United States. There are 94 commercial reactors operating in the United States. They're all embrittled, And Diablo may be the worst, but they're not even testing it at this point.
That's right.
Linda?
Actually, Unit 1 is 57 years old. It was manufactured in 1967.
Right.
Yeah. So
Pre-computer. That Unit 1 was set up with slide rules, for
that's right.
God's sakes.
That's right.
And here they are. They refuse to test. They had a test in what, 2003, was it?
Now, the last test was in 2003, correct.
And they showed that Diablo Unit 1 was one of the top five reactors in the country already to be embrittled. A number of the top five, the four ahead of it, are shut. And here we have a 40, well, it's been operating for 40 years. It opened in 84
That's
and
right.
went critical. And now they won't test it at Diablo Canyon. And Diablo Canyon, remember, it's upwind of the entire United States. God forbid there should be a major accident at Diablo Canyon, the cloud will not only come pouring into Los Angeles, but it'll go all across the continental United States.
That's
Wipe
right.
out the Central Valley, blow up into the Bay Area, and then, cross Kansas, Ohio, Tennessee, into New England. That's what could happen at Diablo Canyon. And they won't even test it. They're
And we
refusing to
don't
test it.
need it.
And
And
we
we
don't need it, as Linda had said. And
yeah.
every day another article comes out. There was a big article today, actually, about the advance in batteries. Batteries, as I'm sure you all know, by and large, the term battery, by the way, was coined by Benjamin Franklin. I've said that before. So batteries have been around a long time, and they've focused on lithium and to be the key component in batteries, and that will continue for cars. Any mobile battery is going to have lithium in it for the next 10, 20 years. And they've just had two major lithium finds, one at the Oregon border with California and the other at the Salton Sea. So there's not going to be any shortage of lithium in the United States. But they are switching the technology on stationary batteries to sodium, which is an order of magnitude cheaper than lithium and in basically infinite supply. So here we have a situation where battery technology is completely revolutionizing, and that's what we will rely on in California, to use all that too cheap to meter solar energy. And meanwhile, they're pretending this is not happening. It's truly amazing. We have 52 people with us. Linda, it's really great to have you with us. What more do we got on Diablo before we go to the next level of corruption here, which we want to talk about? The bribery total. We have Connie Klein on us from with us from Cincinnati. I'm in Cleveland. We want to talk about the mounting toll of bribery in Ohio around nuclear. Do we have any discernible bribes in California yet to report on?
Not that we know of, but who knows? I wish somebody here out of the, how many people did you say? 52?
Yeah.
Yeah, but somebody go for that, okay? Figure out where that corruption is going on.
Well,
It
first, there's another thing I want to talk about with Mike Thaler, which is we're in California, we're in the midst of a brutal attack. I mean, a really concerted, focused attack against solar energy. And Mike, who's with the PDAs, Mike, are you the chair of PDA in the
The president of PDACA, which is PDA California, it's the FPPC PAC for PDA.
What's FPPC?
The Fair Political Practice Commission that overrules elections and stuff. By being a PAC, we have certain rules that we have to follow, and only certain ways we can take donations. PDA is the same thing, except they're FEC, which is national.
Okay. We do have a hand up from Steve Caruso in Columbus, and then we're going to talk about solar in California, and we'll go to Connie Klein and talk about bribery in Ohio. Steve?
Yeah, don't forget how this compares to Enron. I mean, if people
Right.
realize how close this is to the same manipulation of the economy, the energy sources, the whole thing, it's just part and parcel.
And somewhere we want to get the FBI agent in Ohio who, thank you for that, Steve, who surfaced the $61 million bribe that went to the Ohio Speaker of the House. We want him out here and find out who's paying off who. I mean, if the Ohio legislature, if it costs $61 million to bribe the Ohio legislature to give Davis, Bessie, and Perry $1 billion bailout. What did they pay the California legislature to do that? But so we're going to jump into that in a minute. We'll go to Ohio in a minute. But first, Mike Thaler, can you tell us? There we go. The lieutenant governor only got $1 million. The governor got $2.5 million. The head of the PUC got $4.5 million, and then the speaker of the House got $61 million. So there was, somebody add that up by the time Connie comes on. Mike, tell us what's going on with solar and your particular experience here in California.
Yeah, it's been a disaster for those of us that have solar panels. Well, we used to have net metering. We still have net metering in theory, but it used to be that our excess energy that we generated went back to this is in San Diego, SDG&E, San Diego Gas and Electric, and they paid us 2.9 cents a kilowatt hour, and then charged our neighbors up to 65 cents a kilowatt hour for for the electricity that we were producing. That those were the good old days, because now they give us zero. So
My
we
God.
get so when I first got solar panels, the first year I got $100 and something back from SDG&E at the true up, which means $100 worth of electricity paid for at 2.9 cents or whatever it was. This year we have to pay $500 to SDG&E at that high rate, so it's totally wiped us out. But we have something else even worse coming up, and that is the what's going to happen is, let me see, I've got it right here in front of me. Fixed rate electricity based. Your electric bill will be based on your income rather than how much electricity you use. So, that sounds reasonable at first, except it takes away all incentive to save electricity and to get solar panels for that matter. Because if you have solar panels and are not using much SDG&E electricity in this case, you still have to pay a fixed fee, which will be roughly the same as you were paying before you even installed the solar panel. So therefore, there's no incentive to get solar panels. There's no s incentive to save electricity, to conserve electricity. It's just a disaster. So a bunch of our assembly people came up with a bill to not let that happen. And that was AB 1999. And it goes into some detail that we don't need to get into. But one of the things it does is it takes a lot of the authority away from our California Utilities, Public Utilities Commission, which I'll tell you a short story in just a minute. In fact, maybe I'll tell you the short story now. The California Public Utilities Commission bends over backwards or forwards, maybe, to do whatever it is that the utilities want in terms of raising fees. I testified against some things that the utilities wanted, and it had to do with San Onofre, actually, to the Public Utilities Commission a few years ago. And while I gave an example of why we, the ratepayers, shouldn't have to pay for shutting down San Onofre that was leaking nuclear radiation, and they were nodding, and then one of them said, "Yeah, that's I never thought of it that way. Thank you." And then about a week later, they ruled in favor of the utilities anyway. I then, not long after that, was in a meeting where Governor Newsom was a meet and greet. And I know Governor Newsom because I'm a pretty high up or active in the California Democratic Party. I'm a caucus chair. And he sort of recognized me, and I thought, okay, I'll ask him a softball question. He was running, this was when he was first running for governor. I asked him the softball question, which was, as governor, Mr. Newsom, you will be picking and choosing whoever is on the California Public Utilities Commission. Will you pick people who are more in favor of supporting the public or the utility? I thought it was a softball question. His answer was, that's complicated. So there were no surprises to us who were in that room when he said that that he has been a big supporter of the utilities. Why is
Right.
he a supporter of the utilities? I can only imagine, but the word corruption comes to mind.
Well, let's get into that now for a minute, and because we want to put it in his perspective from Ohio. Gary Heidrich, a great activist here, is with us from the San Onofre fight, also where we successfully shut two reactors. When you say SDG&E, you're referring to San Diego Gas and Electric. Let's put this in perspective here. Connie Klein in Cleveland, can you give us a basic rundown of how much FirstEnergy has paid in bribes to the Speaker of the House, the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the former chair of the Public Utilities Commission, who is no longer with us? Connie, you want to give us a rundown?
Well, I think your figure probably was accurate. I don't have an a total figure either. I think probably around 70 billion is certainly
Well, let's do it. Let's do it here. The Speaker of the House got 61 million. The Chair of
I
the
see.
Public Utilities Commission got 4.5 million. The governor got 2.5 million, and the lieutenant governor got 1 million. So adding that up, we get $68 million in bribes to the heads of the various agencies of the government in Ohio to sponsor a billion-dollar bailout for Perry and Davis Besse. $68 million. So then you got to wonder, well, how much are they paying in California for the legislature, the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the head of the PUC? We've already ascertained that the head of the public PG&E gets $17 million a year, and then a year ago got a $25 million stock bonus on top of that. Very impressive. So, what do you think they're paying for the California legislature on those rates?
And the thing with Ohio, I mean, this is considered the biggest corruption scandal in Ohio. But I think Harvey's right there. And some of this money that we cited isn't categorized in the various lawsuits as bribes. But it is. I mean, that's what it amounts to. So I'm sure this goes on. Well, we know that it goes on to some extent in other states. And certainly this was the biggest, according to our attorney general, the biggest corruption scandal in Ohio.
So
Ohio
far.
is I'm surprised to hear how they're finagling solar in California. We the Ohio General Assembly has passed bills. We have the largest wind turbine setback in the country. That is completely obliterated in power. They passed a bill where the counties themselves can kill solar and wind projects been happening in the state. So as far as legitimate renewable energy, Ohio just doesn't have any more. There's no market for it. None of the developers go into it.
Well, let's point out, Connie, as you well know, that the setback clause, this is a sentence or two sentences that the legislature slipped into the Ohio Code in 2014 that killed $4 billion in private investment that had already been approved to put windmills in northern Ohio on farmland, where the farmers were desperate to have these wind turbines because they save their farms.
Ohio was 14th in the nation right around that time, around 12 to 2014, before this bill passed. Ohio was 14th in the nation for wind power, which is pretty impressive. And where I live near Lake Erie is just the wind's blowing all the time. They call Chicago the Windy City. Really, Cleveland has become the Windy City or is matching Chicago. The potential for wind power is great up here. There was a 20-year project to put wind turbines in the lake. That's dead now. That's over with. And that would really would have been a cutting edge, project had that gone forward. So right now, I was really interested in what Linda had to say. The Perry Nuclear Power Plant's license, it's 40 years old. They've applied for a 20-year extension. We fought that through the hearing intervention and hearing process on some issues. We are also going to file a two point, we're about on the precipice of filing the 2.206 petition based on hydrogeology and tritium, which is radioactive hydrogen. That's leaking everywhere, and it's leaking like crazy at Perry. The drinking water standard, without getting too much into the weeds, and then I'll stop. The drinking water standard for tritium is 20,000 picocuries per liter annually per year. Perry just had a tritium leak in January of 400,000 picocuries per liter, which, far
It's
exceeds the annual
untenable.
drinking
And
water limit. And that's not even the highest. Monticello has had, I think, 4 million picocurie
right. And
leak.
that Monticello is in Minnesota. And
Right.
you have Prairie Island, which is leaking tritium, which is right in the middle of the Mississippi River, in
I mean,
outside
all
of
of them are
Minneapolis.
leaking, but Linda was talking about the reactor vessel. All of the components are subject, and the reactor vessel is,
The key.
the core, yeah.
Right.
But all of the components are subject to radiation, and they break down. They're old. Some of them can't even be inspected, let alone replaced. And they leak, and tritium is like a marker
Okay.
radionuclide. We've had leaks of other radionuclides, so that's a
Well,
different thing.
what we have at Diablo Canyon, at Perry, Davis, Bessie, and Carl knows this. Carl Grossman knows this all too well. We have 94 reactors, averaging 42 years of age, that have been fried, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission doesn't want to look at it. And Mike Thaler, you're in San Diego with Gary Tiedrich there, and they installed a new set of turbines at, what was it, $600 million. At San Onofre, and they immediately leaked radiation and wound up having to shut the plant. I
Yep,
mean, do
and it
these people have
cost
any idea what they're
$6
doing?
billion to shut down the plant, of which $6 billion of it was billed to the ratepayers.
$6 billion?
Yes.
And that's why they don't want you to have solar energy, because if everybody gets solar energy, they're out of business,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. Yeah.
It's really, truly astounding.
But
I
they
know
talk
that.
about how great the utilities themselves talk about the great job they're doing converting everything to clean energy. And the legislature supports clean energy and solar, but as long as the utilities can profit from it and not the people who actually paid for it.
Well, we have to keep fighting as Sisyphean as a task it is. I feel that we have to keep fighting to get these things on record so that, God forbid, when the inevitable happens, not that we can say, oh, we told you so, but that we have it on the record that, that it was inevitable that there would be yet
Right.
another
Right.
serious
Well,
catastrophic accident.
it's no satisfaction to be right. I remember marching in Tokyo in 1976, eight, and saying with I was like, 10 Americans in this march, saying, look, you can't build Fukushima. We specifically talked about Fukushima. You can't build a nuclear plant in an earthquake zone that's washed by tsunamis. And exactly what we warned against happened. God forbid all this should happen. Myra Reeson, then Ron Leonard, and then we'll go to Maya Van Rossum
Let
to
me
talk
just
about
say
how.
one thing. Perry in 1986 had an earthquake that registered 5.0 on the Richter scale, and they don't even really know what damage was caused at that point. It was
Right.
before it was operational.
It was
Okay.
the earthquake that hit Perry in Ohio. You know, I grew up in Columbus, and we never talked about earthquakes, for God's sakes. But the earthquake that hit Perry happened right around the same day as the Challenger blew up.
Right.
And Perry in Ohio is now the only reactor that I know of in the United States that's been damaged twice by earthquakes, because we just had the other one that damaged the Washington Monument. It also damaged North Anna in Virginia. So here we are talking about earthquakes in California at Diablo Canyon, and here we have Perry been hit twice, for God's sakes. Maya Reeson and then Ron Leonard, and then we'll go to Maya Van Rossum. Go ahead, Maya.
Mike Thaler said something that made me want to jump into this conversation, because the nuclear industry for years has been trying to convince people that nuclear power is clean energy. And so when we hear the California legislature or anyone crowing about clean energy, we have to keep in mind that, for example, the money that was used, the federal dollars, one point something billion dollars as an incentive to keep to abrogate the agreement to shut Diablo, that came out of clean energy funding that had been put aside by the U.S. Congress. So we have to insist, when people say clean energy, we have to make sure that we know exactly what they're talking about, because of the big lie that nuclear power is somehow clean. That's all.
Thank you.
Or green. Thank you.
Ron Leonard.
So, Connie, you mentioned the magic word, Sisyphus. We are not pushing the proverbial rock up the endless hill. We are trying to save the rock from rolling down the hill and killing people.
Yeah, crushing us all.
Yes. And, you know, those numbers are very important to us. When we see that 1 or 2%, depending on which way you look at it, of the new power plants that were put online, and really it's only the horrendously overpriced power plant in Georgia is nuclear, whereas 53% of it is solar. We notice that, you know, when you make a wise investment, other people will follow you making that wise investment. Whereas if you make a foolish investment and you bankrupt the company and you double the cost of the power plant that you install, only to find out that the dang thing is sort of dangerous to use and we don't know how well it's going to perform over the 30 years of life that they give it, and then they would like to, of course, extend its life. This is basically called in the trade a stranded asset. When you produce power at the cost of nuclear power, which is, I don't know, 5, 10, 15% higher than the cost of renewable energy, why are you buying that power from those guys when you could buy the same power from a clean source, 100% renewable, from solar, wind, hydro, enormously safe, cheap, reliable things? So let's be a little bit smarter. Let's go for smart energy, not...
Well, as we said, Ron, the problem is the entrenched interests. When you have a company like PG&E paying a chief executive $17 million a year, as opposed to $750,000 from Muni, I mean, you know what's going on here. Mike Thaler, I got to hear this again. You're saying that you're being taxed $500 a year for having solar? It's insane.
That's not the tax. That's not the tax. That is... In other words, when I use SDG&E electricity, they charge me for it, like they would charge anybody else. That happens at night. Well, now that I have a battery, it doesn't happen so much at night, but it happens at night. It happens on shady days. It happens everything else. And it used to be they would give us a 3.9% credit for every kilowatt hour we used. They don't do that anymore. And the end result is that when we do our annual true-up, how much do we owe SDG&E versus how much do they owe us? This last one, which was this month, April, coincidentally, came to $495, whereas we used to get money back.
God damn, so, it's outrageous. Ron, go ahead.
A thing that worked well in the past, which is called net metering, which is a fair trade. If you give a kilowatt of energy out onto the local grid to your neighbors, and you just ask them to pay you the equivalent cost of that energy, that they would buy it in the same sense from the dirty utility, unreliably, that's a fair trade. And this is what has built the solar industry for the last 25 years. But that doesn't pay those executives those big dollars. That doesn't count onto the 10% guaranteed funds that the utilities get when they invest in infrastructure. This infrastructure investment is coming from mom and pop, literally taking it out of their bank, putting it on their roof on the good graces of the fact that they would like to have reliable, clean energy and don't mind contributing that energy to their neighbors when they're not using it. It's a fair trade. And of course, the utility doesn't like that trade because the fairness is the real equation.
It's unbelievable. Ron Hunter, by the way, everybody who haven't heard it before, is one of the great pioneers in the renewable energy industry and really knows about as much as anybody on this planet about renewables. We do, again, want to compliment Gary Tiedrick and Mike and the others in San Diego for the job they did getting shut San Onofre. What a bunch of idiots. I mean, San Onofre was running. They put in new turbines, and then they decided to switch out different turbines than the ones they had a permit for. I mean, and then they leaked. And now San Onofre, thank God, is shut. I mean, it's just truly astounding. Let's give Maya.
But you know, the problems with nuclear energy. I'm in contact with Donna Gilmore. You know, the problems never end because the waste is the gift that keeps on giving, and that waste is literally buried in the sand at San in thin.
Yeah. You have a high level nuclear waste dump at San Onofre, 100 feet from the tide line. I'll repeat that, 100 feet from the tide line at San Onofre. It's astounding. I want to welcome Camilla Reese is with us, and I said hi to John Steiner, Maya von Rossen. You are dealing with. Green amendments. So tell the 58 people on the call real quick how that interfaces with nuclear energy and with renewables.
So the first thing I want to say, just building on the conversation that's happened, is the other lifeline for nuclear energy, at least on the East Coast, is hydrogen hubs, where in the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware area, we have the Mach 2 hydrogen hub. It's supposed to be a green hydrogen hub, which is but we're pretty confident they want to bring natural gas in there. But the other thing is that the hydrogen hub is going to be at least fueled by 20% nuclear. And the nuclear power plant that we have in the area is called the Salem Nuclear Generating Station, operated by PSE&G. In my role as the Delaware Riverkeeper, I've been fighting against that facility for 30 years now, more. The PSE&G uses antiquated technology. It uses once through cooling, and as a result, it kills over 14 billion Delaware fish eggs and larvae every year. It's now.
Let me jump in on that real quick. I can't resist. When they tell us about the birds that windmills kill,
yeah,
the response is no windmill ever killed a fish. Okay, go ahead.
So, and of course the birds need the fish. So, you know, the new plant is anyway killing the birds too by depriving them of food, I suppose. But Salem was supposed to shut down in the teens and 20s. It got a life extension that took it out to the 30s. And when the hydrogen hub came, I said, they are going to want to re-up Salem in order, because of this hydrogen hub. It's, you know, they're going to extend its life even further. And sure enough, a couple of weeks ago, they filed for another life extension. And by the way, one of the things I want to say is the near-term shutdown of Salem is one of the arguments that PSE&G has always used against us, where we say, well, look, if Salem's going to operate, you have to use closed cycle cooling, amongst other things. And Salem says, no, we're going to be shutting down soon. And, you know, now they're on their next life extension proposal.
Well, so let me explain that real quick. We have this at Diablo Canyon. Closed cycle cooling means you don't have to build cooling towers, and cooling towers are expensive. And so to get around building the state law in California requires cooling towers at Diablo. I don't know about New Jersey, but the way they got around it is saying exactly what they say at Salem. Oh, we're going to close. Cooling towers are $1 billion. Just let us operate until we close. Now, which will be in 24 at unit one, like right now. And then they could turn around and got an extension, and they're saying that they don't have to build cooling towers, even though it violates state law. I assume it's the same thing going on at Salem and other reactors around the country. So go ahead. Sorry, Monica.
Yeah. So it's really the requirement to do the closed cycle cooling is the Clean Water Act. Clean Water Act Section 316B requires the best technology available on the cooling, what is it, the intake location design capacity. And so that, if you historically has been interpreted to address the once cool brew cooling versus closed cycle cooling. Anyway, the long and the short of it is EPA flipped and blah, blah, blah. Now the states gets to use best professional judgment, and best professional judgment is killing 14 billion fish eggs and larvae every year. Despite the fact that closed cycle cooling could reduce those fish kills by 95%. Well, once through is good enough. Anyway, so I just want to say hydrogen hubs out here are now being another lifeline for nuclear power. I know that on the West Coast, the hydrogen hub is supposedly a clean hub as well. So I don't know if it's also going to be giving a lifeline to nuclear out that way. But
well, it's a total scam. And, you know, as I said, we just discovered a piece today in Bloomberg. Basically, if you read the tea leaves, they've been talking about doing desalinization and nuclear plants, but the technology is very clearly there to do it with solar now. So let's see what happens with hydrogen. Another scam, but maybe the hydrogen hubs we'll read in a month from now can also be done with solar. We'll see. The big scam now, of course, is they're talking about, you know, with AI, high-tech information hubs that need massive quantities of electricity. And of course, all this stuff's going to be owned by billionaires, and they're expecting us to build nuclear plants, the little ones, to promote their or to power their, you know, data centers. So anyway,
So I was going to say that's a perfect segue into green amendments. A green amendment is a constitutional amendment added to the Bill of Rights or Declaration of Rights section of a state constitution. And it uses that placement along with key language to recognize and protect in an enforceable way the human inalienable right of all people to pure water, clean air, safe climate, and healthy environment, and protect those environmental rights in the same most powerful way that we protect the other fundamental rights we hold dear, like speech and religion. Only three states have these amendments so far: Pennsylvania, Montana, and we most recently secured one in the state of New York 2 years ago. But I've got proposals advancing in about 18 other states. Just in the past 2 months, we've had green amendment proposals advancing in California and just announced in Wisconsin and Michigan. But on front about mega information centers, the Pennsylvania Green Amendment is now being used to challenge a Bitcoin, the power source for a Bitcoin facility, saying that this facility is going to give extended life and expanded life to a coal-fired power plant. And the Bitcoin facility is really just to generate profits, right, for a few individuals. And so in that context, the right of the people to a clean and healthy environment, complemented by the obligation of all government officials in the state to protect the state's natural resources for present and future generations, is being used to challenge the ongoing life and expansion of that power source, which is only to fuel Bitcoin, right? So it's a different version of the mega information, but it's the same concept. This mega power, you know, is that we've got these kinds of facilities advancing all over the place. And the question is, how do you challenge them? The laws, state laws, allow this kind of these kinds of facilities and operations to advance. But maybe with a constitutional right of the people, we actually have a pathway to meaningfully challenge. So there.
Maya, you said two critical things. One of them is the fact that you should use best available technology, which is a cooling tower, which we now know does not work when the temperature is 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Texas has proved that, had to shut down all those nuclear power plants. And secondarily, the Clean Water Act requires that best available technology. And if you look at reservoir.org, which is where we challenge the state of New York City in pollution with a state environmental permit, and all these new power plants that want to reopen would have to go through a SPEEDES process, a state permit process, to show that they are using best available technology. They don't take the water in from the ocean and dump it back in the ocean hotter. They don't take the water in from the river and dump it back in hotter. And that is the challenge that I think we can use to legitimately help the ratepayers not get raped off.
My, and just one correction. Under 316B, it's best technology available versus best available technology.
Technology.
Or defined differently. So BTA versus BAT.
Yeah, I wasn't the lawyer, but I can refer you to him.
Maya, I'm not familiar with your petition, but I think it may be the language needs to be tightened up some. I will tell you that an Ohio Energy General Assembly Energy Committee just passed, go to the floor and will go to the Ohio Senate, a resolution declaring nuclear energy green. Now, this was defeated in some other states, but it's something that's percolating throughout the United States to pass actual resolutions declaring nuclear energy green. So when you say green energy, when you say sustainable energy, when you say clean energy, all those terms are being perverted nuclear.
So I don't know what petition you're talking about. A green amendment is a constitutional entitlement.
I understand.
That's different. The petition, the legal challenges to Salem over the years have been court challenges. And then they've been court challenges, and we've lost them, and we lost them because of the way the EPA went back and restructured the interpretation of 316B and the authority of the states to use their best professional judgment to determine what is best technology available. So that's where I agree with you. The misappropriation of language is happening left, right, and center. Fracked gas, you know, has been defined as clean, renewable energy. So it's we have to be very careful about that. And it's one of the reasons why in one of the states where there was green amendment language advancing and people wanted to talk about a way to include clean and renewable energy as in one of the entitlements, one, I pushed back against it because that's not a natural resource. That's not part of the natural environment. But to the extent even then it was discussed, part of the concern was, as you said, the misappropriation of language. Clean energy is not necessarily
tighten up the definitions. It's
when Wendy Lederman on the phone has a question. She wanted to make a comment.
Well, okay, we got. Let's get Steve Sondheim, and then we'll get Wendy. And then this Steve's had his hand up, and then Wendy, go ahead, Steve.
Thank you. It's Stephen Sondheim. For years, I've been curious about antitrust being using to attack the attack on solar. I mean, it is antitrust, and they're doing it all over the country. They started it in California. They're reneging on promises, and they're stifling a free enterprise to their advantage. Does anybody know if there are any efforts to use antitrust legislation against them? I certainly suggest it. We don't have to
Maya?
talk about that now, but it's a big question I have.
So antitrust is different than the trustee language that I talk about in the constitutional context. So I can't say that I know that anybody's using antitrust against truly, you know, good, clean projects. Of course, not every solar project is a good project, but there are certainly
talking about something different. I'm talking about the efforts on the part of the utilities to stifle solar.
Competition.
And anti-competitive, but it's antitrust. They're getting together with these pieces of legislation to stifle free enterprise.
Stephen, I think the problem is that the governments give utilities broad authority, which they abuse, and they claim that they can't have competition because otherwise the systems would be too expensive and they'd step on each other's toes, yada, yada. That has largely been shown to not be true. So I think that what we need to do before we could get at them with antitrust, we have to go at these exclusivity, the legislation that gives them exclusivity in certain areas, statewide or even regional. So, that's a good thought.
I'd like to see some suit entered because I think a reasonable judge would find a lot of hanky panky there. Here,
if you can find a reasonable judge, more
to
no, sorry, the point is well taken. The point is well taken, and it's something that we'll talk to our friends. Tatanka knows a lot of people who brought very powerful lawsuits in various jurisdictions. So that's a great suggestion, and we'll follow up on that. Thank you.
And I want to point out also that, the difference between investor-owned utilities and munis is gargantuan. I mean, if you look at the LADWP, which is huge, their CEO gets less than a 20th of the pay of the CEO of PG&E. And a lot of the rulings that are coming down from the California PUC, which are devastating, do not apply to the DWP because it's a muni. And, and one critical moment came in 1989. The Sacramento Municipal Utility District had unfortunately built a nuclear plant at Rancho Seco, and it was malfunctioning and all this other stuff. And in June of 1989, there was a referendum in Sacramento, and the people overwhelmingly voted to shut the Rancho Seco nuclear plant.
Please catch the rest of the show at grassrootsep.org. And please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Green Grassroots Election Protection Coalition. Thanks.